Tuesday, March 20th, 2018. This is The Better Life. I am your host, Timothy Lawson. I first want to kick off the episode by apologizing to all of you that had to wear down your volume knob and volume buttons last week with my soft and then all of a sudden loud audio. So I do apologize for that. I was admittedly tired, and that led to a wide range in volume from myself. And then when I was done, I saw it and I let it go. I decided to put it out like that, and you all called me out on it. I appreciate the feedback and keeping me honest and making sure that the quality of this production is the way that it should be. And trust me, I know how annoying it can be when you have to constantly adjust levels for production. Hopefully we can keep this. I will say though, this is actually something I've struggled with during my career is my volume range, because I can become very excited and then I can also hit a somber note and you know, my volume drops at that point. But stay on it to the best that I can. So keep the feedback coming. Appreciate all the love. Please leave a rating and review in your podcatcher of choice, whether that's iTunes or some other place. We will be on Stitcher. I'm writing it down right now because I think I said this last week or the past 2 weeks and I still haven't done it. I'm writing it down right now so when I'm done doing this, Stitcher and Google Play. All right, so all of you non-Apple people out there will get an opportunity to subscribe on your device and get updates straight to there. I do apologize that some of these developments have taken a little bit of time, but you know, the wife and the day job, you know, they want to see me sometimes too. In fact, they require it, so they beat all of these other endeavors. I want to start with addressing a couple things that I heard on recent episodes of other shows in the community. The first, if those of you that listen to You Can Bet on Nats, you probably heard my voicemail left for Mark and Dr. Mike about burn cards at the blackjack table and how when I was in Iowa, the dealer refused to show me the burn card, and I was sort of taken back by that because I was used to I thought at least that I was used to dealers showing me the burn card. Some of you have come to my defense saying that you have seen it at your casinos as well. I was just at MGM. And when I sat down, I paid attention to every single time. And sure enough, the new shoe, they would show the burn card. New dealer, they would not. But new shoe, they would show the burn card. So I may be a little crazy, but I'm not entirely crazy when it comes to seeing the burn card at a blackjack table. And then if I remember right, Dr. Mike was recapping his trip to Indiana and mentioning a high limits craps table. First of all, I've never seen a craps table in a high limit room, and apparently they're out there, and I want to experience this. But I thought it was amusing how, and if I remember this right, it was a $25 table, and which made me laugh, because unless you get in before 11 o'clock a.m. on a weekday, you're not playing for anything less than $25 on the main floor here at MGM National Harbor. So I thought it's funny how different certain markets are in certain properties. And it would be nice to go from struggling to get room at the MGM table on a $25 minimum craps table and be able to walk up to a high limit room somewhere else at the same price. So I thought that was amusing. On the latest Vegas Confessions podcast, the gents over there were talking about collecting things from Vegas and other casinos, and I thought it was appropriate that they mentioned that in their episode, their latest episode, because that's something that my guest and I today briefly bring up, so that the timing is right. And when I heard Eric Rosenthal say the number of chips that he has, boy, was I jealous. I thought I was on a good pace with my 30-something chips. This guy's got three times as much. So, challenge accepted. Good sir, challenge accepted. I'm excited to hopefully hit Vegas once or twice this year, and I will specifically be on a chip-collecting hunt to try to up my game. But I think I need one of those chip displays that he was talking about. So, for a little trip report, I was recently at the MGM National Harbor playing a little blackjack, and I just had this conversation with someone yesterday, I think, in one of the interviews that I did for an upcoming show. And as much as I love craps, and as much as blackjack sometimes gets a little boring to me because I don't, you know, it's there's no real. I know you're making a decision and telling the dealer what you want to do, but after a while, it's just methodical. And I feel like in craps, if you get bored, you can at least sort of change what you're doing and what you're rooting for, right? Like if you can switch between the don't and the pass, you can decide to throw like a come bet or a don't come bet out there. If you want to get, if you really want to spice things up, you can try to do a hard way, or you place a 6 and 8 or something like that. Whereas in blackjack, you know, I don't want to play the side bet. But there's really nothing else you can do to sort of spice up your time there. But I will say that I have been playing more blackjack lately because of liability per result. And what that means is in the amount of money that I could possibly lose at the result of a wager. And this is actually one of the reasons why I play the don't when I'm at the craps table is I know the house edge isn't too far off from each other between the don't and the pass line, but there's something about being able to lose all of the bets on the table on one roll that just really doesn't sit well with me. Whereas if you play a don't and you play a continuous don't, you know, you can only lose one wager per roll. And so that's one thing. So the reason why I'm playing a little bit more blackjack as of late is with the pass line bet or the don't pass line bet plus odds, right? I don't play the line if I can't play the odds. Even though the house edge is slimmer in that scenario than maybe it would be at the blackjack table or right around the same amount, it's still more money risked on a result. And so I am sort of leaning towards playing blackjack more at my local casino because I can get a similar house edge. I'm maybe losing out on maybe like a tenth of a percent or something like that, but I'm protecting against liability per result. So that's why I am playing a little bit more blackjack recently. I was at the blackjack table and there was a couple Asian ladies with me there, and it was an amusing time because for at least the first couple hours, I swear that the only English that they knew were hit, yes, no, and monkey. They knew how to call for the monkey. Oh, and nobody home. They knew that, right? From like when the dealer ace up card, they knew nobody home. They loved it. But it was amusing playing with them because I think they just liked playing blackjack. They really, like, it seemed any hand where there was, like, an actual decision to be made, they always looked at me for, like, guidance. And at the blackjack table, I don't have any problem with telling people what I think the better, or what I know the right play is. But it does make me a little anxious to tell them to do the plays that most players are uncomfortable with making when they don't know that it's mathematically the better play. And going, you know, talking about hitting your 12 against a 2 or a 3, or hitting your 8, your soft 18 against a 10, or you know, not doubling all your soft hands against, you know, like a 2 or a 3 or a 4, splitting your 8s against the 10, stuff like that. And so fortunately, I think, you know, they seemed to actually, they were good sports. So I think they trusted that whatever guidance I was giving them was the right play, whether it lost or not. But sometimes that can feel a little awkward when you tell people what the right play is and then they lose. And especially when it's one of those hands that the average player may not instinctively know that could be the right play. While I was over at MGM, I signed up for for one of the blackjack tournaments that are coming up. MGM is really rolling out these blackjack tournaments, and I think they had some good success with them last year and are making sure they happen again this year. I've played in one or two over there. It's a cool format. They do it in a lounge they have there, Blossom Lounge. And at the ones that I've been at, there's been an open bar for participants and really good drinks, really good bartenders making good drinks. And so that's, you know, obviously that's a bonus. And what's cool, what's nice about blackjack tournaments is I can play perfect basic strategy when I've had a couple of drinks, but I know my counting is shot, right? I know that I can't keep a perfect accurate count, especially when you're looking at trying to evaluate, you know, doing the math on how many decks are left and what the true count is and what you should have bet and stuff like that. So what's nice about blackjack tournaments is I can freely drink knowing that I can still make the right plays. And even with the right plays in a blackjack tournament, you may not always want to make the house edge play, or I should say you don't always want to make the value play. You may want to make a play that puts you in a better position to become a chip leader or to guard against, you know, an up-and-coming chip leader. Because in blackjack tournaments, it's not about how many hands you lost or won or anything. It's at the end of the amount of rounds that you have, which in the first few levels, it'll be the top two players, and at the final table, I think it's the top one, or maybe in the semifinals, it's the top one. But how many players have the most chips? And so you'll see players split tens, and right at a normal blackjack table, you're like, what are you doing? But you know, if they have a mid stack of chips in the mid round of, and maybe round. Or hand six or seven when there's like 12 or 15 in the hand or in the round, you know, they will split their tens just to get more money on the table, right? It's you know, like obviously you don't want to double that, right? So you split the tens to get twice as much money on the table and hopefully come away with twice as much money to increase your chip situation. And that's what's interesting about blackjack tournaments is, I always play very conservative in the first half. I'm usually betting minimum or twice the minimum bets, and I'm playing perfect basic strategy and not wavering off that. And then I start making my wagering moves later, depending on how other players are playing. If some players are playing too aggressively, or if other players are playing to double up or stuff like that, or how much they're betting per hand, stuff, you know, that then I start making different decisions. But I usually play more conservative. And the first one that I played, we didn't even have to finish the level. There was a table of six, and four people busted before the end of the round, and so we automatically moved on. And then in the second level, I don't think I won one hand. I didn't win one single blackjack hand. Super frustrating. And then the one of the guys that moved on from that round actually won off of, I think, 50 cents that he had. Like he got a blackjack, or he surrendered or something like that, and he ended up with a fractional amount, and it actually ended up being what he had left. The player in third had busted out, and here he was with 50 cents left, and him and another player moved on to the next round. I thought that was pretty amusing. But I am signed up for one of these blackjack tournaments. I think it's next week. I'm also in a baccarat tournament next week, and I'm hoping to do at least one more blackjack tournament in this series. MGM's calling it the Spring Tournament Series, because all the final table members of each tournament, each day tournament, will then be put in a winner takes all event later. So there's prizes, of course, for each tournament day has their prizes, and then everybody who had hit a final table in those tournaments will then get to go into another event for bigger play. And so I'll be doing next week's, and I'll probably do another one of either the first or second week of April to try to increase my chances of getting there. If you want to support this show, The Better Life, and also possibly get a little kickback, maybe get a piece of some earnings that may come from these tournaments, I currently at my Patreon, patreon.com/thebetterlife, I have a reward level for only $7. And I'm only taking one more patron on this. Already got two people signed up. I'm taking one more. Any money that I get from non-poker tournament play, so any tournament that I do at a casino that isn't poker, you'll get 5% of the winnings. And usually these payouts are a cash prize at first place, and then everybody else at the final table will get promotion chips. And so what will happen in that scenario, should I get to a final table and not get the cash but get the promotion chips, is anybody who is backing me on that Patreon at that level, the level is called Get a Piece. It's $7 per month to continue that action. And anybody who is following me can help vote or help me decide how we play those promotional chips. And so that'll be a way that you, and so if I get $500 in promotional chips, then what do? Do we go to the roulette table and spread them out and try to get as much, you know, as much, get 35, 36 of our money back? Do we go to the craps table and see if we can bust them up on some hard ways? Like, you will help me make that decision. Then whatever money is actually cashed from those promotional chips, then I'll distribute 5% to each person. And I know some people are probably thinking like, wow, that's not a lot of money for 5% of potential earnings. But a lot of these tournaments are luck, and so I'm not the chances of me getting to one of the, you know, like, I don't know how often I'm going to be able to get to a final table and actually cash out. So I thought $7 was the right amount for the frequency in which that will probably happen, and also just an opportunity for people to support this show, and thought that was a good balance there. So patreon.com/thebetterlife. You can always sign up to become a patron and support the show without backing that. You know, $1 does it. Helps reduce costs and fees, and I will have other things available on the Patreon as things move ahead, and as I get the right ideas for how to do that. May do a live stream video, and that Patreon subscribers can hop on maybe once a month or something like that. We can just sit around and talk about gambling or something of that matter. If any of those ideas fancy you, hit me up on Twitter @TheBetterLife and let me know if you're interested in any of those things. All right, let's move on to this week's interview. It is with Mark Meltzer. Most of you know him on Twitter @MeltzVegas. He is very active in this space. He's been on a number of shows within this community. He is someone that I met. I've been following him on Twitter for a while, even through, I think, multiple Twitter handle changes. And him and I have been interacting on Twitter, and finally met each other about a year ago when I was in Vegas for my bachelor party. We met up at SLS, which we met up there because we were going to get a chip from the soon changing SLS, and we ended up having lunch there. Mark is a really wonderful guy. He knows a lot about Vegas. He has a lot of insight on sports books and casinos and food and everything. We're going to get into all of those things, plus his life as a gambler. I know you're going to enjoy it.
Absolutely. You know, the ultimate advantage play for someone that's a recreational gambler is to handicap before going to a casino and betting on at the sports book. Do all your handicapping before you get to the casino. This way you don't have to think. You could just bet and gamble. Yep. And then drink if you need to drink, or just enjoy yourself and not have to worry about counting cards or what the right strategy is for poker or what have you. You could just enjoy the games with the house edge and not be bothered by any specific ideas.
I couldn't agree more. You know, and I think where bettors especially amateur bettors, have trouble with that, Mark, is, you know, they know what they want. They get in there and the line's moved, right? And then now they have to, like, make that disciplined decision of, do they take the other side because now there's value there? Do they lay off the game at all because the value's gone? Do they force a bet on the side they liked because they liked it going into it? And I think that is one of the thin lines between, you know, someone who's successful and someone who really is just a recreational bettor.
Absolutely. You know, when it comes to sports, the experts always say that sometimes the best bets are the ones that you don't actually make. And I sort of agree with that. If the line moves and I don't feel good with it, I just leave it, you know, and, you know, I'd rather spend my money elsewhere.
Yeah. All right, Mark, let's roll into some of the opening questions, and we you know, the audience caught that the last part of that banter, because one thing I've noticed is you're like my fifth or sixth interview now, and I knew this going. I've been podcasting for a long time. I knew this was going to be the case. The people that I've interviewed, we started talking about gambling before we've quote unquote started the show, and it ends up turning into it starts developing into a good conversation. And I'm like, well, I don't want people to miss out on this. So, the listeners getting a little insight to the pre-show banter there. Mark, let's go all the way back to when you were first exposed to gambling, not necessarily yourself, maybe not you betting, but like when you first saw someone else do it or you were around it. Do you remember? Can you think that far back?
You know, it's funny. I actually wrote about this recently for covers, and it hasn't published yet. But the first memory I have of knowing about gambling is actually doing it myself. And that's in the fourth grade. My rabbi taught me how to play poker.
That's wild.
We played for pennies once a week during recess, you know, not a lot of money at hand, but that's really where I learned how to play poker. You know, around that same time, maybe a little when I was a little older, the football parlay sheets made their way around, whether it was my school or my friends or my dad. I used to bet on those, you know, a couple bucks, maybe $2 to $5, you know, every now and again. And then when I really started to understand that gambling was a real thing was probably around eighth grade, ninth grade. I worked in a candy store selling baseball cards, and next door to us was a bookie. And they took sports bets, obviously. And my friend's brothers were very, very deep into betting on football. And I learned the good, the bad, the ugly from them. And I learned way more than I could have ever imagined that I could ever learn in a class or on a podcast or anywhere reading. I learned just the basics of how to make bets and take bets and what, you know, creating something that was interesting enough that people wanted to gamble on it. The guys used to take money on the thing they called the number, which the number was the last three digits of the purse of the last race at one of the local racetracks where I grew up. And I'm like, if people are actually betting this, they're going to bet anything. And it was really kind of mind opening. And, you know, for that to happen and at the age of 13 years old and 12, 13, 14, 15, you know, really just sort of an eye opening entry to the world of gambling. And my first job in gambling was as a freshman in college. I needed to earn some money, and I worked for a 1-900 service, things that don't even exist now. Yeah. And it showed me the shady side of the gambling world, even deeper than I could have learned from the bookies. And it's gone from there, you know. And then from then, you know, I didn't really gamble all that much after seeing the dark side of it. And once I hit 21, I learned about casino gambling. And when I saw my video poker playing friend was getting more comps than I was as playing blackjack and craps, I'm like, I got to learn how to get some of that stuff. And that sort of changed where I gambled. And today I sort of have a hodgepodge of playing video poker and craps and pie-gal poker and sports betting, you know, and sort of touch every point of the casino.
Yeah, so let's talk about that then. So I see you on Twitter, and sometimes you're taking pictures at the Pi Gal table. Sometimes you're playing video poker. I know you've recently been playing the Founders Cup, right? Over at the what casino just put that have that in? Oh,
Fortune Cup. Yeah,
the horse Fortune Cup. Yeah,
the horse racing game. It started at the Venetian and MGM Grand. It just got placed at the Orleans in Red Rock, which is where you probably saw me posting a picture recently. Yeah. I just found out today it's going to be at the D Casino in downtown Las Vegas. It's going to be installed at three other casinos on the Vegas Strip. So it seems like people are into the horses.
Yeah. So let's start with craps. What's your approach on craps? How do you like to bet it?
I will play the pass line and either play two comebacks or the six and eight, depending on my mood.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny, the 6 and 8. I don't know what it is. I know that I have a lower house edge if I just play a few combats with odds. But for some reason, and I think it's the part of being a gambler that wants instant gratification. Like, I want something out there working already. Like, I don't want to have to go through the process of making the combat and then having that go somewhere. I want one roll earlier to have a number. I don't know what it is. And every time I make it, I'm like, why am I doing that? I can just make the combat with odds and grind this out even better. But it's the 6 and 8s. I don't know why it gets
I
me.
can actually tell you why.
Tell me why.
Because not a lot of people play the max odds on those bets.
Yeah.
So why, if you're going to play one or two times odds, why wait?
Yeah.
So, you're not going to decrease the house edge very much unless you're maxing your odds out.
Yeah.
So if you're looking to just get, like you said, a quick return, you don't want to wait for a number to come out twice to get paid. Then it's probably just wiser to play the six and eight. I don't know. I'm sort of with you. When I feel like when I know I'm going to max my odds, I'll do the comebacks just to keep the house edge as low as I can. But if I'm not really looking to max my odds beyond the pass line, I'll just throw the six and eight out there and see what happens.
Yeah, I typically max my odds. It can get difficult when you start getting to like $15 and $25 tables. I don't roll like that quite yet. But when I'm at a $10 table, I usually max my odds when I can. Pai Gow, what kind of how do you roll with that? I'm still new to the optimal strategy, so you could probably teach me a thing or two. But what's your approach there?
My approach to Pai Gow poker is to play and drink and play and drink.
Perfect.
It's a low house edge. It's about 1.5%. The dealers will help teach you, will help show you the right moves to make or the house way bet to place your cards. So I don't really look and see what the optimal strategy is. I just sort of wing it. And again, it's a game I play really to just hang out with my friends, BS and drink. And I don't look at it as serious gambling. To me, that is, as entertainment value goes for a drinker, it's as high as you're going to get in a casino.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of effort into it. There's minimal strategy, but there's some strategy, and it's a very slow, low-paced game. And it's the game that I found a few years ago, and I've really come to enjoy in the past few years. Past couple years actually. And but it's just a fun game, and I do play the envy bet for the side bet to make sure that if I ever hit something nice or somebody gets a royal flush or a straight
Yeah.
flush, I get paid out on that as well. And that's again not a smart bet, but it's one of the few bets you can make in Pai Gow that actually increases the, I guess, the fun quotient more so than the house edge quotient. Might
Yeah.
not be a smart bet, but it's a fun bet.
Sure. Yeah. There's something about fun bets that even APs would tell you would shake their heads at you, but anybody else, that even if you're a disciplined bettor, those fun bets are sometimes a little too tempting. Video poker, do you hunt down good games or do you just sit down and start playing?
Well, one of the best reference, yes. To answer you,
Okay.
I do both. I will play the awful bonus poker games at the casino bars on the Vegas Strip when I'm there. But if I'm looking to play myself alone, I'll usually hunt down the best machines in the area. There's a great website called vpfree2.com, and they have a great community of people that will go out to casinos and report the best pay tables that you can find. And I use that, and because I gamble for the most part, or I play video poker in most of the same casinos, I know exactly where to go when I want to play. And thankfully, the Red Rock Sportsbook Bar has full pay bonus poker games, so
Oh, wow.
it's the best of all worlds as far as I'm concerned, where I could watch the games, play a little video poker, drink some complimentary beer. It's really sort of everything that I like all in one. I could also work there, so that's a fun time.
Yeah, absolutely. So you say you live and work out in Vegas. Do you find, are you gambling each day? Like, would you say you're making some sort of wager every day?
Most days, probably.
Most days. Okay.
But sort of the way I try to explain it to people is that when I lived on the East Coast, I had a gambling budget every month of X. I still have that same gambling budget. So, or a similar gambling budget. So I, as much as I gamble more often, I gamble for less. So my stakes might not be, you know, dollar video poker, $5 video poker as often as it used to be, just because the economics of gambling, you know, to some extent, 5 days a week is a lot more difficult than gambling 3 days a month.
Yeah, and I imagine that, you know, for those of us that don't live in Vegas or don't live, you know, like when we get there, we focus on getting as much table time as possible. I suppose, you know, it's not a concern for you.
Yeah, no, I mean, like today, for example, I wrote an article at Red Rock in the food court this morning. I played on my way in. I played my traditional $20 on my way to get Starbucks and, you know, I played a slot machine today because there was a little multiplier. So I got seven times the points, which ultimately turned into a free cup of Starbucks coffee, which turned into fuel for my work day. You know, there's other days where I will go out with friends to casino, and I tend to spend more money when I'm with people than when I'm alone.
Yeah.
From what I paid attention to. You know, it's just I don't have patience to gamble alone, so I'm usually in it for, if I'm playing a higher denomination, in it for a shorter term fix, not a long term fix. I don't want to sit there for 4 hours by myself on the same $20 bill when I play video poker. I'd rather play higher limits and either hit it or quit it.
Yeah, give me your favorite places to play. Maybe give me one on strip, one off strip, and then like a third wild card that is lesser known.
I can give you a bunch, actually.
Okay.
Because I like to gamble, and I like to gamble pretty much everywhere I go.
Perfect.
But the Cromwell on the Vegas Strip, they have multiple 3-2 blackjack games for under $25. You won't find that anywhere else on the Vegas Strip, as many games. They also have 100 times odds on craps.
Yeah.
They have single zero roulette. They have a sports book now. Caesars is the bookmaker there, so you know, enjoy whatever you can with what you want there. But it's a hidden gem for gamblers. It's the best craps game on the Vegas Strip. Multiple blackjack tables, blackjack games to play. And the service there is just phenomenal. And they remember everyone that plays there, which is kind of amazing. A friend of mine comes in once a year for a particular convention, and the dealers recognized her every year from that she's since they've been open, essentially. The cocktail waitresses know exactly what I want to drink whenever I visit, which is really just a great thing.
Yeah.
Downtown Vegas, my three favorite casinos are all my favorite for one reason, is because they have 10 times odds with craps. I like the D. It's a party vibe there. I love Golden Gate. That's probably my favorite place to gamble. It's a small casino, great craps game, 10 times odds again, great blackjack games, 3-2 they pay. And then the El Cortez has the best $5 blackjack game that you're going to find anywhere in Vegas. It pays 3-2, single deck, but they also have 10 times odds craps. Now, you might run into some homeless people there, but it's sort of what makes El Cortez special.
Yeah,
I love the Red Rock out where I live. But there's plenty of great casinos in the suburbs. Whether you're looking for a luxury experience like Red Rock or M Resort or Green Valley Ranch, or if you're looking at South Point, maybe the Orleans, the Gold Coast is one of my favorite casinos in all of Las Vegas, and I think it gets lost in the shuffle of the bigger names. But it's pretty close to the Vegas Strip. That's where I learned how to play pie gal poker. So Maybe that's why it's so near and dear to my heart. There's really a lot of great casinos in Vegas, and that's just, but I play at Red Rock a lot just because I live here. So.
Yeah, sure. I know that you're like me and like to collect chips from the places that you play. Maybe either in Vegas or maybe a casino outside of Vegas. What do you think some of your more unique chips are?
I'm actually not a chip collector.
Are you not?
No, but I try to buy them when I know a casino was closing.
Okay, I'm you
So
misled me because the one time you and I have met, you were like, I'm here, so like the SLS was closing, like I'm here to get a chip, so I just assumed you were a chip collector.
no, I that I that my mini chip collection actually started at that same casino when Sahara closed. I went
Okay.
there a couple days before it closed to get a chip. And something I've gone to Monte Carlo because they're going to rebrand and have new chips later this year. I have O'Shea's chips just because they were closing. But I don't really go out of my way to look for unique chips. My favorite chip is probably Britney Spears because that's my girl.
Yeah,
And,
okay.
but no, I don't really have a lot of unique chips out there. I guess Sahara is one that people would like just
Yeah.
because people love that place. But honestly, I found it. By the time I found the Sahara, it was a dump and I hated it and I'm happy it's gone. And, SLS is what it is. And that supposedly will be gone shortly. And a new name will be plastered on the casino. So, but who knows? I don't really know that yet for a
Yeah,
fact.
very well, very well. You could have fooled me on the chip. Well, I like to collect chips.
What is your favorite unique chip?
Probably. And I did not ask this question to get into this side of it. So I wasn't baiting you into asking me. But the Aviation Club of Paris. I was in Paris one time, and they had a betting parlor there. And you had to like pay. I was only there for like a week, but you had to pay to have a membership there. And they only had blackjack and poker. It was a bad blackjack game. It was one of those where like you bet and you had like also have an ante, or like you had to have the side bet. And so I played there for a little bit, but it's since closed. And it was considered like a high, it was considered like a not a high roller place, but like a fancy betting parlor. And I have a chip from there that I think is cool. And then I have some other ones from like around the world when I was in the Marines. So those are it. But every time I go to Vegas, I take a inventory of which casinos I have chips from. And I make sure that when I'm in a new casino that I have a chip from that I somehow acquire. I just get the $1 ones. I don't look for like any like special edition chips or anything like that. But I do try to go get a low denomination chip for my little collection.
Yeah, you know what? I lied. I have a George Wallace chip that's probably my favorite, and it's
Oh, that's
unique
cool.
from the Flamingo. My
Yeah.
man George is awesome. So
Yeah. Okay,
there you
that's
go.
cool.
George Wallace and Britney Spears. Those are my unique chips.
I dig it. I dig it. Do you have any do you have a favorite gambling, casino, or Vegas themed movie or TV series?
Well, I have my favorite Vegas movies are the Ocean's 11 remake, the Ocean's 13. I guess it's not a remake. And then Vegas Vacation, which encompasses sort of the best of everything about Las Vegas
Yeah.
and sort of what I grew up with. And then on the TV side of things, I think the Las Vegas TV show, I don't know if you remember this, it was about 20 years ago now. It was James Caan was in
Yeah.
it. Stumail was in it. I don't know who played Sam Marquez, but she was in it.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of a hokey look at Las Vegas. And just it was one of the things that got me excited about Las Vegas. And even though the show was so old, I could still watch it and have it feel fresh.
Yeah, and I really liked that show. And what was great about it is at least in the first few seasons, a lot of the stories or a lot of the events in the episodes were inspired by real life events that occurred in Las Vegas. And so you're getting fictional accounts of things that actually occurred in Vegas. And one of the things I remember is like 15, 20 years ago, there was a guy that sold all of his belongings and like went to Vegas and wanted to put it all on red, right? And that's a real story. And you know, in Vegas, in Las Vegas show had an episode, like that, where a guy like sold all of his belongings and went to Vegas and wanted to make this like, it was like $180,000 one roll bet. And there's a bunch of other, stories like that. So that's one thing I really appreciated, about that show. And I'm surprised it's taken this long for someone to mention that show too. I figured that people would be into that if they were into Vegas, but maybe it didn't appeal to all audiences.
No, I mean, it was sort of schlocky and hokey, and I don't know that it appeals to, you know, a lot of people that just aren't into schlocky and hokey, you know?
Yeah, that's sure. Do you find yourself, like, what gets you excited in Vegas anymore? And I know that being someone who enjoys recreational gambling and a lot that Vegas has to offer, I'm sure, you know, obviously you enjoy it. But, you know, what still gets you that excitement living there that maybe you used to have, like, when you would visit? Does that question make sense?
It does make sense. And it's still the same thing, to be honest. It's the new Vegas. I'm not a fan of vintage Las Vegas. It's fine. You know, people like the things that were here 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. I'm excited about the next thing. I want to see the next beautiful casino. I want to have the next interesting experience. I'm always looking for a new way to enjoy myself, whether it's a new casino game, a new bar, a new restaurant. Just there's so much happening in Las Vegas that I'm looking for what's new. And when I find something I like I Instagrammed a picture of the Chandelier Bar at the Cosmopolitan. It is, that place is my favorite bar on the Vegas Strip, and it's been that way since the casino opened. That kind of thing still excites me. You know, the things I love, I'm passionate about, I still have a passion for, but I don't get lost on that. I'm still looking for ways to replace them, you know, and sometimes they're there and sometimes replacements, you know, it takes a while. You know, we haven't had a new great bar to overtake Chandelier Bar since the Cosmopolitan opened, 6, 7, 8 years ago now. I guess in 2010 it opened. So it's been a while since I've had a great bar experience on the Vegas Strip, you know, but I'm looking for it. You know, I'm looking for new places to eat, drink, gamble, and, you know, enjoy myself. And that to me is what's exciting about being in Las Vegas. I don't have to wait for my annual trip to go experience that.
Yeah. And,
you know, when something opens, I'm there right away, you know, or I can be there right away if I want to.
So what is your insight in your thoughts on the pools in Las Vegas? Because by the time people listen to this, pool season will have started. Most of the pools in Vegas will have opened, and I don't think many people. I don't know if anybody goes to a certain. Well, actually, that's not true. I do know people that go to certain properties so that way they can experience that pool. But you know, what's one or two pools that you know, pool experiences that you think people should look into if that's a priority for them?
If pools are interesting, I recommend the best pools are always going to be the best pools. So if you like, if you have a family, the Mandalay Bay Pool and MGM Grand Pool are fantastic. They have lazy rivers, large complexes, a lot to do. If you're a little bit more of an adult and you're looking to just be around people your age, head over to like the Cosmopolitan and Wynn. I think you'll find more people there to your liking. You know, one thing that I think is very underrated is that the non-strip casinos, there are a few that actually have great pool scenes. I mentioned Red Rock because I'm here, but they're a luxury resort and their pool complex could fit anywhere on the Vegas Strip. M Resort has a great pool complex. Green Valley Ranch, again, has a great pool complex. Downtown Grand in downtown Las Vegas has a nice small pool deck with gambling and blackjack up there, and it's very affordable. Golden Nugget has a great pool, but that's a very family-oriented pool. The Plaza has a new pool deck, very nice. They have gambling up there. They have a little craps tub that you're not going to find in very many pools. So
a craps tub?
You ever see the one dealer craps tubs?
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's I'm thinking like a hot tub with a with a craps table in the middle. I was like, that sounds awesome. But no, I know what you're talking about.
It's just a little mini craps table that sort of they put it inside of a tub, it seems.
Yeah. The Flamingo has one of those in it.
Yeah,
I've played there, yeah.
exactly. Same thing. But there's only a handful of casinos that have those. The Golden Nugget is another one that has a crap the craps tub, as we like to say. But the Flamingo on the Strip is, and maybe when you could play craps as well, I think.
I'm gonna be so we I've actually just booked my hotel. I still need to get my airfare, but my wife and I are gonna be in Vegas in June. We're going for it's funny we're going for the first round of the World Cup. It just so happens that the dates we chose or it just so happens that week of the World Cup also overlaps our 1 year anniversary. So we'll conveniently be in Vegas for that. We're staying at the Link. Now I've gambled at the Link, but that's about it. What do you know about the Link? What can I look forward to there?
All right. First of all, it is one of my favorite places to stay on the Vegas Strip.
Okay.
It's relatively cheap. The rooms are tiny, but they're modern and feel bigger than they are. The Link, the shopping promenade, has In-N-Out Burger, has a Yard House that you'll probably enjoy because they have a good amount of craft beer. They have decent food. I'm a big fan of that area because you're also right across from Caesar's Palace if you want that experience. You're next to the Flamingo. You're next to Harrah's. It's a great location to casino hop. And like I said, the shopping promenade between the Link Casino and the Flamingo just sort of has a lot of restaurants and bars where you can enjoy yourself. And it's also home to Virgil's Barbecue if you're into that kind of stuff.
Sure. Back in June, like June's almost around the corner, I suppose. But last June, I was out there for my bachelor party. It's when you and I met up. We were staying at the Flamingo, and we were. I mean, that's we almost did. We did very little outside that little three property stretch of Flamingo, Link, and Cromwell. Like we were there for most of our time. At least I was, especially when it came to gambling in the pool there at the Flamingo. Mark, we're gonna get a little look for a little more serious story here. I don't know how you if you have one to provide us, but can you tell us about any time that you found yourself or maybe witnessed another person sort of gambling over their head, maybe chasing a loss or just betting sort of recklessly and almost to the point where there was room for concern.
Well, I really, yes and no. When I was younger, I saw some people with broken legs and broken arms, that got there from betting on sports.
Whoa.
And that taught me, like I said, it sort of that between that and when I worked for the 900 service, the gambling service, when I was a freshman in college, we were calling people that were just out of Gamblers Anonymous.
Oof.
So I've really, since I've become legal to gamble, since I hit 21, I've really tended to just stay away from that. There was a time after I graduated college where I saw people do drugs for the first time. And, it opened up my eyes like different strokes for different folks. You do you, I'm going to do me. And I'm really not going to worry about what you're doing, whether it's in a casino, whether it's real life. So, ever since being a kid and seeing people getting hurt for not paying their gambling debts and dealing with people just out of Gamblers Anonymous, I really tended to just sort of shy away from that.
Yeah, that man broke. That's a quick way to learn not to bet over your limits, that's for sure.
And that's why I'm still a recreational gambler.
Yes. Yeah, thank God for that, huh? Last question I have about Vegas, and for anybody who's listening and a fan of this show, probably lines up or would be curious about this. Tell me It could be on strip, it could be off strip, whatever. Tell me the one property you would suggest to someone who literally wants to just stay at the one property the whole time and is someone who likes experiencing everything within a property. Let's say table games, sports books, spas, restaurants, entertainment, etc. What do you which property do you think offers the best of that, or at least the best average of all that?
Let me give you two.
Okay.
Because I don't know people's bankrolls. I don't know everyone's wallet.
Sure.
If you have money, go to the Cosmopolitan. Best restaurants, great casino, great bars. It's just my favorite casino, probably on the Vegas Strip. If you're low rolling and you don't have a lot of money, but you want all of that, go to the Link. They have, like I said, cheap rooms. Everything is affordable. The restaurants and bars between with the promenade allow you even a little fresh air if you want to go outside. You could stay inside. There's multiple different gambling areas, whether you're in the tag bar area drinking beer or the main casino area or O'Shea's just hanging out and broing down and listening to cover bands.
There's
sort of an experience for everyone on a budget there, and I think it's great. You know, and I think the two together are a perfect combination as far as everything I love in Las Vegas.
One thing I loved about the Link, and of course I don't have the experience in all of the casinos, but past couple of times I've been in Vegas, the Link was the only place that had good craft beer available for gamblers. Like everywhere else, be like, do you have an IPA? Like, no, we don't have that. But the Link had several available at their bar. So I definitely appreciated that.
Yes, tag bar there is just phenomenal for beer drinkers. They will comp you a ton of, like you said, craft American beer or craft imported beer, which you're not going to find anywhere else in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Mark, we're going to wrap up the episode with a fun little bet that you have to make. You don't have to make it, but this is a bet your life on it. Mark, I'm going to give you two things, and I want you to choose which one you think is going to happen first. You're going to bet your life on it. Should you win the bet, you would gain a complete second lifetime, which means when you're done with this life, you're just given a whole second one. But if you're wrong, dead on the spot. Which one of these things will happen first, Mark? Will the Browns win a Super Bowl, or will we see a third-party president elected?
The Browns.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think that's consensus. You were the quickest in naming your bet, but 5 for 5 now on the Browns, and I agree as well. But it has been funny asking people and hearing the hesitation in their voice, and it just shows like how poorly we view the Browns that we think there's a chance that maybe that's not the case. So 5 for 5, going to have to think of a new one now to move forward with, but I appreciate you playing. And of course, if you're wrong, no one's going to come to make you pay up, Mark. So,
well, I'm not going to be wrong, so I'm not really worried.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I don't know if we'll be around to see either. You know what I'm saying? So,
I would say before I retire from life, the Browns will definitely win a Super Bowl. I would not be surprised if it happened in the next 5 years.
All right, that's fair. That is fair. There's no reason why they can't, right?
But that's one I would not bet my life on.
Very well. Very well. Mark Meltzer, where can people check out your stuff? I know you write for a number of different outlets. Where can people sort of follow everything that you're doing?
You can find everything on Twitter at Meltz Vegas. You can actually, contact me there. We can go back and forth if you want. You can also find my work at my blog, edgevegas.com. It's Edge, E-D-G-E, and the word Vegas. So that's sort of where the name came from. On the Twitter side as well.
Very well. Mark, thank you so much for your time. This was fun. It's always fun talking to a Vegas insider, someone who's out and about as a regular more than us, just us visitors. So I appreciate your time, man. This has been fun.
Been fun for me, too.
There we go.
That was fun.
Big thanks to Mark for joining me. It's always a pleasure talking to that gentleman. That was the last time that I'll be asking the Browns versus third-party candidate for the Bet Your Life on It segment. I think what I'm going to do is whenever a side gets up to 5 votes, I will move on to another question. So next week we'll start a new question, maybe something in the boxing realm. That's as much as I'll say to tease that. Maybe we'll pair up some boxers and make people choose one or the other. Again, I'm on the East Coast. I play in Maryland, but I also like to play in Pennsylvania when I get a chance, and I'm hoping to make it up to Atlantic City for maybe a meetup or something that we might have up there. But if you're in the Mid-Atlantic area and would like to throw some dice, play some poker, sit at a blackjack table, or even just grab a cocktail and chat, let me know. I want to participate in this community and get to know some more people and collaborate and spread the good word of the recreational gambler as much as possible. If you are someone that enjoys betting NBA, Tankapalooza 2018 is what's affectionately being called. My man Gil Alexander has been covering it each and every day since this became a thing. 7 teams in the NBA tanking and trying to get their 25% lottery for next year's draft. It's the last year that the worst team will get up to 25%. And so teams are incentivized to tank. And if you're paying attention, it is so clear that they are. The teams include the Bulls, the Kings, the Mavericks, who else? The Suns. And when one of these teams are on the road against a team that is battling for playoff position, and that's the other side of this that's important. When one of these teams are battling for playoff, playing a team that's battling for playoff position while the tanking team is on the road, that is a money line play on the fading the tanking team. So like today, let me pull it up. Today, I believe is, I know that the teams are the Jazz and the Pelicans. That's right. The Pelicans are playing the Mavericks and the Jazz are playing the Hawks, another tanking team. Both the Jazz and the Pelicans are playing at home against tanking teams, and the Jazz and the Pelicans each are fighting for playoff positioning in the standings. And so I have tied up the Pelicans and the Jazz in a money line parlay, and I've also bet the Pelicans straight up on the money line. I got it at -430, which in any other scenario I don't think I would ever comfortably take a -430 money line. But if you've ever heard the joke that someone's betting a game like they already know the score, it's kind of what, like, this is the closest that I think I'll ever get to that actually being the truth. Is I've been following this this phenomenon along with Gil's coverage, and it's just amazing. You can just see teams desperately trying to not win games. And when I mean teams, I don't mean the players on the court. We're talking about the decision makers. And so when you see that the Mavericks aren't playing, you know, Dirk Nowitzki and their better players in the latter part of a game, like when they were playing Toronto the other night, they went into overtime and none of their good players were playing. They had a negative expected value team or lineup on the court, and sure enough, Toronto came away with the win. And so it's happening. And if you're into NBA betting, I suggest riding it in whatever way you feel comfortable. Don't bet your house on it, but do take advantage of this situation. I think that's going to do it. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. There's a lot of great podcasts in this community, so I'm honored that everybody's taking the time to listen to mine at The Better Life on Twitter. Thank you. Good night. Good luck.
mentioned the Better Life. We talked about it last episode.
Yes, sir.
I love this fucking show.
Yes,
it's good. Isn't it good?